Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I'm back. Good morning. Welcome to the Dean Richards Show. I'm Jim Tirano, Elton Jim, filling in for Dean Richards. But listen anyway. Glad to be back here behind the mic. It's been a while. Dean takes so few days off. I am his official fill-in, I guess. And in fact, well, of course, Dean has me fill in for him, but he doesn't always trust me with his show. And so, of course, he can never stay away from the airwaves too long. He's only on, what, 7 days a week somewhere on a radio or TV station. And even though he has a day off, it's Dean Richards. Hello, Dean Areno.
Jim, happy 4th of July to you and to everyone listening.
So I picture a Dean Richards on a Sunday morning with a very rare day off in a silk dressing gown, just casually walking through the house with maybe an iced tea or maybe a cafe latte. What does a Dean Richards do on one of his few days off?
What do you have me pictured, like Hedy Lamarr or something? What?
Or Olivia de Havilland. Some, you know.
I don't even know what a silk dressing gown is.
Oh, I bet you don't have about seven of them. With a little paisley print? No?
I don't know what a dressing gown is. Is that like the sleeping gown?
Yeah, right. You remember
grandfathers used to wear?
Yeah, like remember Scrooge had like that white, you know, he had like a dressing gown on, you know, in A Christmas Carol.
Fred Mertz had one of those too.
Exactly. Yeah. And I see you with that with the cap, with the cap as well, with the little ball at the end of it.
No, I do not. I am not dressed like that. I would have to go to I don't even know where you would go to buy one of those.
Oh,
things.
Sure you do. Go on Amazon. Everything's on
Gowns R Us somewhere that you can go to.
Oh, I'll lend you one of mine. I'll lend you one of mine.
Yeah, I don't think so. I'll tell you, not enough. Let me just say, not enough tide in the world for that.
There you go.
You said at the start of the show that I sometimes don't trust you when you fill in. That's incorrect.
Okay.
I never trust you when you fill in. So, small difference.
Well,
still the same. And it's just, it's tradition that when you fill in, I call to say hello and try to screw up your timing as much as I can to get you behind the clock.
And but you're already
going to do that today.
Oh, very good. Well, I appreciate
that. Because I know you have a short show. It's a short show today, and so I don't want to. I don't want to get you too messed up with the timing.
Well, I appreciate that because I am trying to, as usual, stuff at least 5 pounds of bologna in a 1 pound bag. So there's a lot going on.
Now, what do you have? What do you have planned?
Well, we are going to celebrate, as you can hear in the background. Today, of course, is the 4th of July. Happy 4th of July. Happy Independence Day.
I just thought that was a microphone from Wacker Drive. That was a lot. Hey, is Schwanee and Andy there?
They are there.
Yeah, we're here.
We're listening intently.
Good morning.
Yes, in fact.
Are you allowing them to speak, or is Mr. Egomaniac going to...
No, in fact, I
was politely waiting my turn.
Unlike you, Dean, I include them in very dramatic and fun recreation. So today, the mighty Elton Jim art players are going to present a dramatic recitation of Paul Revere's Ride, the poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. So, Andy,
I can only imagine who's going to be playing Paul Revere's horse in this drama.
Well, you have to tune in and find out. There you go. Nice. listen, my children. So, and then at 10 o'clock.
Did you book the guy from Police Academy to do all the sound effects?
Yeah, I have Michael. What is his name? Michael Kinsley, or what was his name? I can't remember his name.
I can't remember.
Michael Winslow.
Winslow.
I mean, it's Winslow, yeah.
Yeah, right. Andy knows it. Michael. Yeah. He can't purr. Hee-haw. But, yeah, and then at 10 o'clock, I'm having my high school history teacher on to debunk the Paul Revere's Ride poem, because we only know about Paul Revere's Ride, most part, through this poem, and a lot of it isn't even true. So we're going to provide your listeners, your audience, with something to take when they go on their 4th of July to their holiday parties today, rather than just bringing a red, white, and blue Jell-O mold or a sheet cake with blueberries and raspberries, you know, for the shape of the flag. I'm going to have them armed with historical facts to be the centerpiece of their holiday outing. So that's what I am going to deliver today.
I would just say, you know, to keep, you know, just to have in the back of your mind that this alleged history teacher is the person that contributed to who you are now as an adult.
Oh,
that they contributed to the building of your character. So I'm just saying
no,
that
he is a,
you know, keep that's just a caveat.
Brother John Viatoris, formerly of St. Patrick's High School right here in Chicago, and now at Lewis University, is an esteemed professor there, and he is one of the most he is so excited about history. It was my favorite class in high school, and I said, you know, if I'm going to talk about history, I've got to get in touch with Brother John. So that who's going to be on the show. Short show. I don't have enough time to do major damage. So I think that's good. And as I said, I always appreciate you giving your audience to me. I promise I will take care of them. As I'm babysitting your time, I will not order a pizza, and I will not have my boyfriend come over. I'm just going to pay attention to what I have to do.
What you do with your boyfriend is your own business.
Dean, you're already.
Are you going to have the far flung forecast?
That's yes, I am. Yes. Oh, yes. We are having many Dean isms and regular segments as much as we can. So there's
that's a Schwanny-ism.
Right. But I'm just saying, you know, there's a little.
But it's the most popular thing on WGN. So, you know, it's important that we have.
Of course. No, there's a little Dean flavor in here. And Elton Jim is just stirring the drink. It's always the Dean Richards Sunday show. I'm just here to babysit. So.
Oh, man. It's a good thing I have my sleeping going on with all the smoke you're trying to blow up there.
Well, right now I'm getting frantic gestures from Brandon. I'm sorry, Brendan, the producer.
Brendan, Brendan, the producer. Yeah.
Yeah. So let me.
I know Brendan. I've worked with Brendan many times. I'm pretty much sure he's not even sure who you are.
He doesn't know at all. He has no idea, and you should see the look he's giving me. So thank you, Dean.
I'll end on this because I know you have everything meticulously planned and timed out. What time are you off today? What time is the show finished?
10:30. Only have an hour and a half. Now an hour and
okay, very
45
good.
Minutes. Or not even 40.
So I'll end then with my 4th of July message to the nation.
Mm.
Elton John filling in today.
Elton John.
Listen anyway.
Oh!
Elton Jim. Yeah, whatever.
It doesn't matter.
Elton just filling in. The main part of the message, listen anyway.
Thank you, Dean. Dean Richards can't stay off those airways even on his day off. Thank you so much, Dean.
He hung up.
I know. Well, I don't think he did. I just potted him down. That's what I like having. I love having the control because I do have to take a break. So we have Schwanny. We have Andy Mazur. We have a lot to go here. So stay tuned on this Sunday morning. Happy 4th of July. Elton Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. And as he said, listen anyway. And by the way, no switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. But as Dean said, listen anyway. So, Dave Schwann, how you doing there, buddy?
Doing well. Happy 4th of July.
Good to be here with you on a holiday. Do you have any big plans after the show to celebrate?
Actually, no.
Mr. Social.
I'm going to. That was last night.
Okay.
But this afternoon, doing some stuff around my place. I'm back here in for Steve Grzanich tomorrow morning. So,
oh, nice.
I'm going to rest up for that and be ready to go for tomorrow.
And how about you, Andy? How you doing? Any big plans for the 4th?
No, actually, just hanging around the place. We went out to a nice little dinner last night with a few other couples, and we're recovering before we play a little golf tomorrow.
Oh, very nice. In fact, I saw Andy on the GN Sports show the other night, and I saw your kind of mini man cave behind you were talking.
Yeah.
You had the nice Ron Santo
flag up there, yeah.
Flag, and you had a Blackhawks banner.
Right.
And you also had a photo on your monitor of, was that your dog with a Blackhawks jersey?
Yes, that is Otis Taves, the new center for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Otis Taves.
Yes.
Now, does he have an immune deficiency disease, too?
No.
Is he okay?
He's just a wild man. He's going to lead the league in penalty minutes.
There you go.
For biting people.
Oh, nice.
Just kidding.
Yeah, I had to laugh. I saw you on there, and I saw that behind you, and I said, wow, this is almost like my own Elton John room, except it's all sports.
Yeah, it's my little sports cave, you know, and my girlfriend and I share the office space there, so, yeah. You know, I get the one wall back there so that when I'm sitting at my desk, it shows back
Yeah,
there.
What's on her wall?
Well, we had a UCLA flag up there first. She went to UCLA, but we've taken that down. So she doesn't do too many Zooms now.
Yeah, it's just like my house. For the most part, it's all Elton stuff. My wife has like one room in the corner.
Well, we share and share alike.
Yeah, right. So, Schwani, let's do a little far flung, buddy.
Ready to go.
Fling it.
Oh, I was waiting for our music, but.
Oh, do we have to? I'll do it.
That'll work. Happy 4th of July, everyone. In fact, our far-flung forecast does deal with the 4th of July. We go downstate, way downstate, Illinois, to Kaskaskia, Illinois.
You're making that up.
No, I'm not making it up. Very interesting, fascinating place of Illinois history and American history. It's about 75 miles southeast of St. Louis, actually, and was originally part of the French territory in the 1740s. And we'll get to a little bit more about that in a moment. But by the time of the American Revolution in the 1770s, it had become part of the British province of Quebec. So British
Really?
And French territory happening down there. And as a result of it being part of British territory, it also was a place, a little bit of a fighting going on in 1778. General George Rogers Clark, that name may ring a bell for you. Speaking of bells,
Why?
We'll get to that in a moment. George Rogers Clark took the area and Kaskaskia from the British during the Revolutionary War in 1778 and rang the church bell, which had been a gift to the King of France to that area on the 4th of July, 1778, to celebrate the victory over the British in Kaskaskia.
Wow.
Kaskaskia later became the very first state capital of Illinois in 1818.
Instead of Springfield?
Springfield didn't become the capital until after Vandalia was the state capital.
Oh, my goodness.
Springfield is like the third state capital we've had
in Illinois. So our capital was named after an onion? What was that one? Val what?
Val...
What?
Vandalia.
Oh, okay.
Vandalia.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, you're thinking Valdosta.
Well, Chicago isn't Chicago named after the city of smelly onions?
Yeah,
so I just figured there
like
was a whole onion theme for the whole state.
Right. But another interesting aspect of Kaskaskia, it is the only place in Illinois west of the Mississippi River. And the reason for that is because of a disastrous flood that took place. And actually, the river changed course and cut off Kaskaskia and that part of Randolph County from the rest of the state. There's a bridge to get to Kaskaskia. One more interesting fact. It was a population of about 7,000 200 years ago. Right now, the population is about 14.
Wow.
So
14.
Kaskaskia, Illinois, was part of the American Revolution, 1778, on the 4th of July, ringing the bell there, General George Rogers Clark, known as the Liberty Bell of the West, and we now have 69 degrees in Kaskaskia.
Wow. Kaskaskia, Illinois.
Kaskaskia, Illinois.
Wow, that you really flung it this week, there, Schwein. We'll take a quick break. Elton Jim's filling in for Dean Richards. But listen anyway, and no switching. Happy 4th here at WGN, 720 AM. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards, but listen anyway. I will be, after this next break, we are going to have a little historical segment for you. Over the last month or so, I had observed how there was a lot of history that we really were never taught or never heard about. About a month or so ago, you may remember there was the 100th anniversary of the Tulsa, Oklahoma massacre, where a complete African-American neighborhood was literally destroyed over racism. And then we've just had now the federal holiday of Juneteenth, which is another milestone and a date that I never learned about in history class. We have the film of a few years ago, The Green Book, a book that was published for African Americans as they drove around segregated parts of the country that would be welcoming to them to stay in a hotel. I never heard of The Green Book. I just heard about a couple of weeks ago that in 1969, in the summer of 1969, from June to August. Now, you may remember, in August, in mid to late August, that's when Woodstock took place in 1969. Of course, we all know about Woodstock and the birth of a new generation, and the baby boomers took hold of the culture and the counterculture and all that. But I didn't know that between June and August, before Woodstock, in New York, in Harlem, throughout the summer, there was a musical cultural festival with some of the biggest African-American groups of that time, like the Temptations and Gladys Knight and the Pips. It was called the Black Woodstock. There's a documentary that's directed by Questlove from The Roots and from Jimmy Fallon Show that's on Hulu right now. This entire event was filmed. Did you ever hear of the Black Woodstock? Where has all this been in our history? And so it got me to thinking, how much of our history is missing from our history books? And today, of all days, it's July 4th, right? We're celebrating the Declaration of Independence and the birth of this nation. And I'm wondering how much of our history, good or bad, has either been downplayed or erased or buried for whatever reason or simply not recorded. And so it got me to thinking, on the 4th of July, are there some historical facts that perhaps we do know about, but or we think we know about? You know, so many times they say that history is written by the victors. And so a lot of times events that happen are told from the mind and the eye of those who are now in charge. They often say that, you know, World War II would have had a very different story if the other side would have won. Well, same way here. So we've heard all these stories when we were growing up, and we took all of our high school and history classes, and we know about George Washington, and we know about Benjamin Franklin, and now, thanks to the stage play, we discovered who Hamilton was. I mean, this guy almost was taken off of the $10 bill until that play. I mean, Hamilton really has Lin-Manuel Miranda to thank for not being taken off of the sawbuck, if you will, because he was just about going to be removed. And now I think they're still thinking of taking Andrew Jackson off. I'm not sure. But so anyway, we've heard about all these stories about the birth of our nation and all these big names. And it got me to thinking about a few years ago, my wife and I went to Boston and we walked the Freedom Trail. It's a great historical thing to do if you're ever in Boston. Boston's a great city, except if you want to drive there. Then it's unbelievable to drive. You could be on one street driving north at one time, and the next minute you know you're driving south. It's unbelievable. It's one of our first cities, and it was basically driven or made for horses, not cars. And so the streets are just completely twisty and curvy. So you want to walk when you're in Boston, especially downtown. And the best place to walk is on the Freedom Trail. And one of the stops on the Freedom Trail is Paul Revere's house. So I'm like, great. My wife and I walk in, and it's, you know, a typical kind of you know, 17th century or six, you know, 18th century house, but they tell the story of Paul Revere's ride. And little as I'm in, we all think we know it, right? One if by land, two if by sea. Paul Revere goes out in the middle of the night, screams, "The British are coming, the British are coming." That's what we know. Well, as I'm in the house and they're sort of giving the whole description, I find out that there was another writer named William Dawes. And then I find out there was a third writer, a doctor, and they all were going to Lexington. And apparently they were going to Lexington because the British troops were going to kidnap Samuel Adams, who we now know because of beer, and John Hancock. I never knew this. Where was this in my history books? And of course, we all know about Paul Revere's ride because of the famous poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, Paul Revere's Ride. And I found out as I read more at Paul Revere's house that this poem is really just a piece of art and fiction. There's not a lot of truth in it. There is some woven in it, but there's a lot that isn't. So I thought we might as well. I'd love to have Shwani and Andy take part. We have done some theatrical recreations, right, Shwani and Andy? Remember, yes. we did A Christmas Carol and A Wonderful
Life.
A Wonderful
Life, yes.
Yeah.
That's broadcast history now.
Yeah. I mean, and Shwani, I mean, you played Mary Hatch.
Yes.
Incredibly. I mean, oh my gosh, I thought Donna Reed was in the room with me.
Well, we also did a little bit of A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
And I was Mrs. Cratchit.
And you were Mrs. Cratchit. Now, it's funny how you always get cast.
Not today.
In the gender bender roles.
Today.
No, no, not today.
No, sir.
No, today, this is 4th of July. This is serious stuff here. So I thought with the great voices of Andy Mazur and of Dave Schwann, we would read, because when was the last time you actually heard the poem of Paul Revere's Ride?
So I thought, how often have you heard the whole thing?
The whole thing. So the three of us are going to clear our throats during this break, and we will come back and have a very stirring and moving and patriotic reading of the Henry Wadsworth Longfellow poem to celebrate 4th of July, to celebrate the birth of our nation, Paul Revere's Ride. Right after this, Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards, but listen anyway. No switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Happy 4th of July. And listen anyway. So, do I have the, you know, if people remember the Johnny Carson show, he used to every so often have a little play, or he would do something called the Mighty Carson Art Players. So I thought that I would have my own little group of thespians, radio thespians, which include, for today especially, Dave Wadsworth Schwann.
Ooh.
And Andy Longfellow Mazur.
Thank you very much, yes.
Along with Jim Henry Toronto.
Shouldn't it be James?
Yes, it should be James. Yes. You're correct. James, yeah. That's, I like that. Very good, sir. James Henry Toronto. So we have James Henry Toronto. We have Dave Wadsworth Schwann. And we have Andy Longfellow Mazur. And we will be now presenting for you, as those fifes and drums play in the background, a patriotic reading of the famous Henry Wadsworth Longfellow poem from 1861, Paul Revere's Ride. Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere. On the 18th of April in 75, hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year. He said to his friend, "If the British march by land or sea from the town tonight, hang a lantern aloft in the belfry arch of the North Church Tower as a signal light. One if by land and two if by sea, and I on the opposite shore will be, ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm, for the country folk to be up and to arm."
Then he said good night, and with muffled oar silently rowed to the Charleston shore, just as the moon rose over the bay where, swinging wide at her moorings, lay the Somerset, British man of war, a phantom ship with each mast and spar across the moon like a prison bar, and a huge black hulk that was magnified by its own reflection in the tide. Meanwhile, his friend, through alley and street, wanders and watches with eager ears, till in the silence around him he hears the muster of men at the barrack door, the sound of arms and the tramp of feet, and the measured tread of the grenadiers marching down to their boats on the shore.
Then he climbed the tower of the church up the wooden stairs with stealthy tread to belfry chamber overhead, and startled the pigeons from their perch on the somber rafters that round him made masses and moving shapes of shade by the trembling ladder steep and tall to the highest window in the wall, where he paused to listen and look down a moment on the roofs of the town and the moonlight flowing over all. Beneath in the churchyard lay the dead in their night encampment on the hill, wrapped in silence so deep and still that he could hear like the sentinel's tread the watchful night wind as it went, creeping along from tent to tent, and seemingly to whisper, all is well. A moment only feels the spell of place of an hour and secret dread of the lonely belfry and the dead. For suddenly all his thoughts are bent on a shadowy something far away, where the river widens to meet the bay, a line of black that bends and floats on the rising tide like a bridge of boats.
Meanwhile, impatient to mount and ride, booted and spurred, with a heavy stride, on the opposite shore walked Paul Revere. Now he patted his horse's side, now gazed on the landscape far and near, then impetuously stamped the earth and turned and tightened his saddle girth. But mostly he watched with eager search the belfry tower of the old North Church. As it rose above the graves on the hill, lonely and spectral and somber and still, and lo, as he looks on the belfry's height, a glimmer and then a gleam of light. He springs to the saddle and bridle he turns, but lingers and gazes till full on his sight a second lamp in the belfry burns.
A hurry of hoofs in a village street, a shape in the moonlight, a bulk in the dark, and beneath from the pebbles in passing a spark, struck out by a steed that flies fearless and fleet. That was all, and yet through the gloom and the light, the fate of a nation was riding that night. And the spark struck out by that steed in his flight kindled the land into flame with its heat. He has left the village and mounted the steep, and beneath him tranquil and broad and deep is the mystic meeting the ocean tides, and under the alders that skirt its edge, now soft on the sand, now loud on the ledge, is heard the tramp of his steed as he rides.
It was 12 by the village clock when he crossed the bridge into Medford Town. He heard the crowing of the cock and the barking of the farmer's dog, and he felt the damp of the river fog that rises when the sun goes down. It was 1 by the village clock when he galloped into Lexington. He saw the gilded weathercock swim in the moonlight as he passed, and then the meeting house windows, blank and bare, gazed at him with a spectral glare, as if they already stood aghast at the bloody work they would look upon.
It was 2 by the village clock when he came to the bridge in Concord Town. He heard the bleating of the flock and the twitter of birds among the trees, and felt the breath of the morning breeze blowing over the meadows town, and one was safe and asleep in his bed who at the bridge would be first to fall, who that day would be lying dead, pierced by a British musket ball.
You know the rest. In the books you have read how the British grenadiers and regulars fired and fled, how the farmers gave them ball for ball from behind each fence and farmyard wall, chasing the redcoats down the lane, then crossing the fields to emerge again under the trees at the turn of the road, and only pausing to fire and load.
So through the night rode Paul Revere, and so through the night went his cry of alarm to every Middlesex village and farm. A cry of defiance and not of fear, a voice in the darkness, a knock at the door, and a word that shall echo forevermore. For born on the night wind of the past, through all our history, to the last, in the hour of darkness, in peril and need, to the people will waken and listen to hear the hurrying hoofbeats of that steed, and the midnight message of Paul Revere.
Wow. Nice.
Easy, big fella.
Oh, the mighty Elton Jim art players with a fine rendition. Congratulations.
That was award-winning.
And I have to tell you, folks, Andy and Schwani did not know they were doing this until this morning.
Correct.
Only had about an hour or so to prepare. My goodness, I don't know about you. I'm teared up. I love the fact that, you know, Schwani, you can't see this, but Schwani is decked out with a powdered wig. Andy, I love the white stockings and yes. the waistcoat. I mean, you guys really have just, you know, you did much more than I ever would expect it.
Well, you know, it is the 4th of July.
Yeah. So, wow. Thank you, folks. That was, I don't know about you, but now that is the official and pretty much what we have learned. All we know about Paul Revere, for the most part, is in this poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow that happened in 1861, decades after this, the Revolutionary
that was,
War.
You know what? It was written during the Civil War.
Exactly.
1861.
Yeah. And from what I did a little research on this, this event, if not for Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, was not even a footnote in American history leading up to that time. In fact, when Paul Revere died, at his funeral, his ride, his famous ride, was not even mentioned. It wasn't even mentioned in his list of accomplishments in his life. So it really wasn't until years later, and Henry Wadsworth Longfellow had written this poem and elevated this ride to such historical lengths that we now know of this ride just because of that. But as I said, there's a lot of facts that go into this real ride and who was involved and what it was all about. And so we're going to take a quick break, and after the news, I'm going to have a Brother John Viatoris, who is a professor at Lewis University, and before that, many decades ago, he was my honors history teacher at St. Patrick's High School. He lives and breathes history. He really made history come alive for me, and to the fact that one of the reasons that I have traveled so much around this country and around the world is because of some of the enthusiasm that he had for history. I wanted to see some of these sites that he talked about. And so I thought, if there's anybody here who can fill us in on some of the real historical facts about Independence Day and about Paul Revere's ride, I know of no one better than Brother John Viator. So after the news, Brother John will, we have just celebrated the Paul Revere's ride poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. And after the news, we will have a little session to debunk this poem. And my hope here is to arm you as you go to your holiday plans and parties today, later on in a couple of hours. I'm sure you've been hard at work on your red, white, and blue jello mold or your sheet cake with the blueberries and the raspberries in the shape of the flag. I don't know. Maybe you bring water chestnuts. I don't know what you bring to your holiday 4th of July celebrations. But what I want to do is arm you not with food, but with facts. You are going to be the hit of your party as everybody sits around and you start to tell the real story of the 4th of July and Paul Revere's ride. What more could you ask for from a radio show? I don't know. At least that's what I'm going to give you. So anyway, we'll take a quick break. It's Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards here on Sunday. But listen anyway, and no switching. Happy 4th of July, WGN 720 AM. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning. But listen anyway. I also should make an announcement today. I never worked for, although I did write a few stories for them, but I never officially worked for the Chicago Tribune, but I took the buyout anyway. Everybody else did. I figured I'd take one too. So on this 4th of July, I thought it would be interesting to hear and discuss a little bit about our nation's history. And when I say our nation's history, I mean our real nation's history. We're finding out over the last several months, over the last several years, that a lot of what we've learned in our history books as kids in high school or college, there were some kernels of truth, but there were also some stories that didn't get into those books or that were kind of altered to make a nice narrative. But really, things didn't happen the way we think they did. And earlier in the show, Shwani and Andy and I read the poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow called Paul Revere's Ride. And for most part, that's through that poem, this work of art, this work of fiction in many ways, became a historical document. It became the history, or a part of it, of our nation's birth. And I was wondering, with so many questions now as to what really happened in our history, as we're going back, we're hearing about so much stuff, how much of this was really true? I have to say, when I went to good old St. Patrick's High School on the northwest side of Chicago on Belmont and Austin, the oldest Chicago all-boys high school, by the way, still, I think, believe, celebrating their 160th anniversary this year, by the way. One of my favorite classes was my honors history class, and the teacher who taught it was a gentleman named Brother John Viatoris. He now is a professor of history at Lewis University in Romeoville, Illinois, still around here. And so I said, if I'm going to talk history, I'm going to try to find somebody that I know not only knows the facts, but knows how to convey it with an amazing enthusiasm. I sat in the front row, and I would watch Brother John Viatoris teaching history as if he was there. He really inspired me. It was one of my favorite classes of all 4 years in high school. And it really inspired me to go on, and I've traveled quite a bit around the country and around the world to see some of these sites that I heard about in his class, just because he made them come alive and I wanted to see them in person. So to maybe help educate us this morning about our own history on 4th of July, and maybe in some ways debunk the famous Paul Revere's Ride poem that we read a little earlier, let me welcome to the show Brother John Viatoris. Brother John, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on, and I am just excited to have you here. I don't know if you remember me from several decades ago at St. Pat's, but as I said earlier, your history class, your honors history class, was among the favorites I had all 4 years.
Well, Jim, I do remember you, and I remember some of the other students who were there as well.
So here's what I'd like to do. Over the last several months, we've been hearing about major events in America's history that somehow never made it to our history books. We just heard about this Tulsa massacre in 1921. Mm-hmm. We were now hearing now it's a federal holiday, the Juneteenth commemoration. Yeah. There's so many things, so it got me to wondering, here we are on 4th of July, what about our own history that we learned in history books as young people that were ingrained in our mind? How much of our history is missing? How much of it has been erased? Or how much has been either altered or downplayed or elevated for a bigger, wider narrative of what we want our history to be? And so I thought, first of all, we could start out, you've got some facts. We're celebrating July 4th, but John Adams didn't think we should celebrate July 4th, did he?
You're right. John Adams believed we celebrate our independence and that we would have been celebrating our independence on July 2nd.
Now, why is that?
Explain why?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that, why? Just because it lands on a Sunday today and then it's a holiday? Or why are we doing it?
No. Not because it's a Sunday.
Should I have had my party 2 days ago?
Here's what John Adams said. John Adams said, the Continental Congress voted for independence on July 2nd. They approved the Declaration of Independence on July 4th. So here's basic long story short, here's what happens. On June 7th, a man by the name of Richard Henry Lee introduces a resolution saying we are going to be independent of Britain. What the Congress did is they said, okay, we don't want to just vote on that resolution. We need to explain why we're going to do this. And so what they did is they set up a committee of five people. Some of the people on that committee we've heard of, we're familiar with. John Adams was on that committee. Ben Franklin was on the committee. Certainly Thomas Jefferson was on the committee, and two others, Roger Sherman and Robert Livingston.
Well, that was an A-list. That was A-list, yeah, right there.
Absolutely. What that committee of five did is they met, and they realized right from the beginning, the best writer here is Tom Jefferson. You write the document. You explain why we're doing this, and then we'll look at it. And so that's when Jefferson writes the Declaration of Independence. He gives 27 reasons why we are going to be separating, becoming independent. And so when that was out of committee, the full body of the Congress then met, and the first thing they did is they considered the Lee Resolution. Do we want to be independent? And they voted for that on July 2nd. And therefore, John Adams thought, well, this is going to be the day that we're going to be remembered. And he later on, I can talk about how he believed we should celebrate it. Then what the Congress did is then they considered the draft of the Declaration of Independence. And they finally approved that on July 4th.
So here's
the deal. If we celebrate our independence, that was on July 2nd. If we celebrate the Declaration of Independence, the document, that's July 4th. But the decision to become independent was made on July 2nd.
I'm surprised they just didn't split the difference and say, well, let's do it on July 3rd. Well, how interesting. So here for most, well, not most of our lives, for all of our lives, we've been celebrating what we thought was the birth of our country. But really, it sounds as if July 2nd was the true birth, because that was the day that we decided to break. We signed it on the 4th, but that major vote is the real move
You're right. Yeah. The vote was on July 2nd to become independent. And you're right. 2 days later, then they approved the document, the Declaration of Independence.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, right off the bat, Brother John, you are mystifying us with historical knowledge. That is right away now, the listeners of this show, you have information to take to your holiday party. Listen, my children, you shall hear how the 4th of July is not so dear. There you go. So that's what we're going to
do.
We're going to take a quick break. I'm talking to Brother John Viatoris. He's a history professor at Lewis University in Romeoville. He's also my former high school history teacher at St. Pat's High School, and we're going to continue to take a look at some unknown history of our U.S. history. Right here at WGN, 720 AM, I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards, but listen anyway. And by the way, no switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards this morning at WGN, 720 AM, but heck, listen anyway. Got on the phone as our guest today on this 4th of July, my former history teacher from high school at good old St. Pat's High School, now a professor of history at the Lewis University in Romeoville, Illinois, Brother John Viatoris. Thank you for joining me, Brother John. You've already passed on some very information that July 2nd may well have been more appropriate for us to celebrate our nation's birth than today, July 4th. What I wanted to talk about now, earlier in the show, we talked about Paul Revere's ride. And it's this famous moment in history where Paul Revere jumps on his horse in the middle of the night, calls out the Minutemen, looks up to the North Church in Boston and says, one if by land and two if by sea, with the lanterns, and basically spread the word that, of course, the British are coming, the British are coming. My first question is, did he ever say that?
Probably not. here's why. The American colonists saw themselves as being British subjects.
Oh,
to say the British are coming would not clearly communicate what, in fact, was happening. He may have said, if he, first of all, I don't know if he shouted very loudly because there were British in the area, but he may have said the regulars are coming, or perhaps the redcoats are coming.
Right.
But I don't. He didn't say the British are coming. That would not have been clear.
Right.
To colonists at that time.
How funny. Yeah. And so, as I said, when I went to Paul Revere's house on the Freedom Trail in Boston, they had a lot of information about the famous ride. Of course, they had the poem posted there. But then they also talked about some of the real events. And I was shocked to learn for the first time that not only was Paul Revere not the only rider, but there were two other riders.
Yes. Yes, there were. William Dawes. And a man by the name of Samuel Prescott. And basically what happened, can I give a little explanation of Boston?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Boston is kind of a peninsula that sticks out and is surrounded by water on three sides. Right. On the east side, you have the Atlantic. The west side, you have the mouth of the Charles River. So on the other side of the Charles River, that's where Paul Revere and William Dawes were positioned. They had the signal at the Old North Church because that was the highest elevation in Boston. And basically, what happened is that the governor of Massachusetts was General Thomas Gage. He received instructions from London to seize American colonial weapons and gunpowder and ammunition that was being stored up in Concord. Now, Concord is about at most 20 miles from Boston. The spy system was very, very good for the American colonies. They were always watching the British soldiers.
We've always had a good spy system, huh?
Yeah, we have had a pretty good spy system. What they didn't know is how would the British soldiers get to Concord? Would they cross the Charles River? Or would they go take a land route, and this would be the more southern route, going around by land along what is called the Boston Neck. What they're going to do, both routes, the northern and southern route, will meet up together before they get to Lexington, and then eventually they go all the way to Concord. Now, Lexington is about 12 and a half miles from Boston. So Revere is on one side of the Charles River, and on the same side, further south, is William Dawes. And what happens, of course, is that on the belfry of the Old North Church, when they see the British leaving, they go by water. They cross the Charles River. So the old saying, one if by land, two if by sea, two lanterns then are hung at the belfry of the Old North Church. And that's when Paul Revere begins his ride. Dawes also rides, and they meet together just before getting to Lexington. They were supposed to warn Sam Adams and John Hancock at Lexington that they may be taken into custody by the British troops. Now, some people think that that was intelligence that the colonists got that was false. Okay, but they did. They were staying there in a minister's home in Lexington, and they did warn the two of them that the British may take them into custody.
And
what happens?
And Sam Adams was just having a beer at the time, right?
Maybe he was brewing at the time.
There you go. Yeah, and so, but anyway, they weren't kidnapped.
After Lexington, outside, they start heading toward Concord. British forces did capture Paul Revere. So Paul Revere then is taken back for questioning. What happened then to William Dawes is that he fell off of his horse and had to walk back to Lexington. Now, there was a third person who joined them, a young man by the name of Samuel Prescott, who was a physician. And Prescott was the one who made it to Lexington. Made it to Concord. And he was the one who told them that the British are coming to confiscate stockpiles of guns and ammunition.
So actually, Dr. Prescott was the one that actually got through. Paul Revere didn't make it.
No, he didn't make it to Concord, He didn't make it to Concord.
Well, I'll tell you.
But Longfellow popularizes Paul Revere in the poem that he wrote in the mid-1800s.
Right, yeah, unbelievable. And so here we are. We've learned this look at these facts that you gave us today. Completely, for the most part, people do not know that. Whatever we know about was due to the poetic pen of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow more than the history books. It's really amazing when you look at that. Well, Brother John, I appreciate your time. I do have to run, but I just want to thank you not only for taking time today on July 4th, and I'm sure as a history teacher, this is a fun day for you, but I really want to express to you that when I was a senior in high school and I took your history class, it was one of my favorites. You really made history come alive to me, and I always remember that class. I remember you, and you really have helped influence me to go out and learn about history and actually encounter it and see it in person. So I just want to say thank you so much.
Thank you, Jim, and thanks for having me.
Thank you. That's Brother John Villatoris. He's a professor of history at Lewis University here in Illinois, in Romeoville, Illinois, and formerly my history teacher at St. Patrick's High School. I want to thank everybody. Don't forget, right now, up next is the Honda 200, the Indy Honda 200 from Lexington.